So we are holding on Cliff Gallant on the bays, six lines from the bottom. Okay. We left off yesterday. We're trying to figure out, we know obviously when you, if you stole something and you have to repay the keren and the chomish, the keren obviously is considered mamon for all intents and purposes. You can sue the person in based in, etc. We started discussing yesterday, on the face of it, based on what it says in our Mishnah, as well as in a Braisa, the Chomesh is Mamun as well. It's not just something the Torah obligates you to pay, as in without it you don't have your Kapara, but it's considered an actual monetary obligation. With all that implies, the guy can sue you in Basin, make you swear for it, etc. But then we brought a Braisa from Torah's Koinim that seems to imply that not. That if your father stole something, and regardless whether there were false shavuos involved, even if he swore falsely and you did as well, or even in all the various permutations where one or the other didn't swear falsely, or did swear falsely, you're still the yodish, the son doesn't pay the chomesh. So we ended up saying then, so Rav Nachman had said that there may be a distinction whether he admitted or not. So we said, if he didn't admit, then how did he come to be paying the keren? And also we have another braisa that seems to imply that it doesn't really matter, as long as one of them had admitted, then you have to pay the keren. So why should there be a difference between the keren and the chomesh? That's what we're holding, six lines from the bottom. Ela mai lo hoga. So no, we have to answer when Rav Nachman said to Fa'enfer that he didn't admit, it means lo hoda aviv v'hoda bnoi. It means the father was never moida on the gzela while he was alive, but now after he died, the son is moida. So therefore, the keren he has to pay, the chomesh not, because you have the pasuk that implies that you only pay the chomesh where it was your own gzela. Okay. So now the question is, v'ni chayev v'nei chomesh ashvur didei. Fine, why aren't we mechayev the son a chomesh then, on the grounds that it is his own gezel? In other words, fine, the original gezel was done by his father. But after all, Pnei Yeshua explains what the Gemara is asking is, we know that this whole concept of chomesh and asham, this whole concept of keren v'chomesh v'asham doesn't only apply to gzela, as we learned in the Mishnah, based on the pasuk, it also applies to if you found a lost object and claim that you hadn't found it. It also applies if you hired a worker. It also applies if you hired a worker and didn't pay him, and then he comes to you for the money and you swore falsely that you paid him, etc. In all those cases. So by the same logic over here, fine, the father originally stole the money. The son is still holding on to it because he's the one. They come to Beis Din, new, pay up what your father stole, and he swears it was already paid. I already paid it, or my father already paid it, or whatever, when he didn't. We're being mechayiv in the keren. Why shouldn't we be mechayiv in the chomesh for the fact that he himself swore falsely?
But he didn't steal himself.
It doesn't matter, though. The point is, given that he's holding on to it illegally, and holding on to it illegally is enough to be mechayiv in
the...
What? That's the question, basically. Why should we assume that in that case, why should we assume that the Pasuk is telling us that in that case he doesn't pay a chomesh? Maybe the Pasuk can be understood to imply that you only don't pay the chomesh if it was your father who swore falsely, not you. Amri, so the answer...
Is it the same question?
What do you mean, is it the same question? That is the question.
Say that holding on to something that was stolen by somebody else is considered gezel, as opposed to the other question, which is, you're paying the chomesh, although you didn't steal yourself.
Well, no, what we're trying to figure out is, basically, why do we have a braisa that tells us, why do we have different braisas in Torah's Koinim that tell us that the son always has to pay the keren, but never has to pay the chomesh? Why should that be the case? If you're going to say that, if in the situation where his father didn't admit to the theft, to the stealing, but the son did, why shouldn't we be mechayev in the chomesh? Amri, and so the answer is Gzela Kayemis. We're talking about over here a case where the original stolen object no longer exists. We'll learn in the next parak. We touched on it briefly before, but at the beginning of our parak, but we'll learn in more detail in the next Mishnah and the Gemara in the next parak that if the original, if a person steals and then he bequeaths it to his children, and the original object no longer exists, their pots are from paying. Actually, we learned at the beginning of the Perek that that's the thing. It's the davar masurim. If it's a definitive object, you know, it's an identifiable object that everybody can say he stole this. Then, if he did tshuva before he died and just didn't have a chance to return it, then they're supposed to return it mishum kavod avihim. But otherwise not. Otherwise, they don't have the obligation to return it.
They're not considered that money?
No, because they're not the ones who stole it.
But they're keeping it.
But that's the thing. Since they're not the ones who stole it, their pots are from paying.
Interesting, this is a mitzvah, Hashem is Aveda.
But that's not, this is not Aveda, this is Zela. Their father stole it, so if it's a matter of covered for him, in particular if it's a dover on the Suryam, then yes, but otherwise, well, sure, if they want to return it, lots of Sujay Shemayim, you can say, hey, but they don't have to.
But that's my interest is that for an Aveda, you have to return it. For a Zela, you don't have to return it.
Because the guy was Kone, it's Bashinu, it'll be you, Shinu, whatever. We'll learn about it when we get to it, Pastor Shem. We'll learn about it next week. Okay. Fine, if you're going to go that way, they don't have to pay the Karen either. Again, why are you distinguishing between the Karen and the Chomish?
In other words, there's no Karen. There's no
Chomish. Yeah. The answer is, Loi Tzricha De'ik. Yes, but we're talking about over here that there is a case where they have to pay back, namely if their father left them karka. If their father left them karka, if he only left them metaltalim, metaltalim are never under a shibud to their father's choiv anyway. So even if it wasn't zela, even if it was a loan, they still wouldn't be obligated to pay back. And to answer your question, I guess the same thing would be true as far as an aveda. If their father had found something, he died without having gotten around to returning it, and all they have is metaltalim. Maybe they can't be, I mean, well, again, if it's a davar masuryim, they have to return it anyway. But if it's not a davar masuryim, if the object itself no longer exists, they can't be made to pay it back because there's no shibud on the top.
But an aveda, if it's a davar masuryim, it has to be
returned.
That's
the return, fine. But the zela also, if it's a davar masuryim, has to be returned,
after
fine.
After the debt?
Anyway. So, therefore, but since there's achrayas nechassim, since their father left them land, that they have to return mishum kavod avihem, as we learned at the beginning of the parak, that we're talking about the case where the father did tshuva before he died, and now but he didn't have a chance to actually return, he didn't actually have a chance to do the mitzvah of returning the exam. Okay. Now, these next couple of lines, these next three or four lines of the Gemara, Rashi holds don't belong here. Because the Gemara is going to ask, what the Gemara is going to ask is that even if you have land, isn't it the equivalent of a milval peh? Isn't this fundamentally the equivalent of a loan without a document? And you can't collect on that because there's no document over here.
What do you mean a loan without a document?
If I lend you money verbally, even in the presence of Edim, you can't collect from Tauka, or you can collect from Bnei Chor in a mind, or not from Mishabodim, we learned about that in Gittin. And by the same token, you can't collect from from Yoshim.
Yeah,
because you don't have a shtar. Here, there's no star. So let's learn the question and the answer first, and then we can talk about why Rashi doesn't like it.
Wait.
Question is, v'chi'ikan achrayis nechosim mayhav. So what if there's achrayis nechosim? So what if the Gazlan bequeathed land to his children? Milval peh. It's still effectively a milval peh. It's a verbal loan. There's no document involved. Well, milval peh in a go v'lemin a yoshin v'lemin ala kofas. And when it comes to a milval peh, we know the rule is you don't collect from the yosh, I mean you don't collect from anybody who bought property from him, from the chasam b'shabadim.
Why is it a milval peh?
Because there's no shtar here. Wait.
There was no peh, he didn't say anything.
Amri, so the answer, b'sha'omad b'din. Yes, but what you're talking about over here is where before the father died, the case had actually come to Beis Din, So therefore, at that point, even if it's a milval peh, already the shibud has taken effect. Okay, you mishalman v'nir for the chomish na mishalim, and you back to shouldn't there be the chomish as well? So now, as I said, so the Gemara is going to answer why there's a distinction between the keren and the chomish. Amar Rav Huna b'Rav Yerushal, if she ain't mishalman chomish akfirat shibud karkois, because in general you don't pay the chomish for denying a claim that involves karka. Namely, the whole point, how do you come to be paying the chomish anyway? Because you swore forfeit.
It's not directly.
Listen, what's the situation? Why are you paying the chomish anyway? Because you swore forfeit. You don't swear false. You don't swear in the first place on cases involving karka. Now, so what happened when the father? When we're talking about the father himself, Klein. Even though, yes, eventually, yeah, conceivably, the gzela could be paid out of his karka, but it's not in and of itself a claim on karka. It's a claim on the original object or the monetary value of it or whatever. So therefore, yes, there could be swearing involved. Once he's dead and they inherited property and the shibud is only on that karka because shibud can't be on the talpalim of Yisoymin, then if he goes to Beis Din and swears falsely that he paid back the keren or that his father paid back the keren, what he's doing is he's swearing falsely on a case of shibud of karka. Because, as Rashi says, if there were no karka over here, he had no obligation to pay at all. Because again, the original object no longer exists. We're only talking about tzad shibud, and he's denying a shibud on karka. Denying a shibud on karka, you're not supposed to swear in the first place. And therefore, when he swore falsely, that didn't really change anything. That didn't really change the situation. It doesn't make him obligated in the chumash, therefore.
What is it, you say denying the shibud on karka?
Okay. Because he's denying that there was a shibud, that this guy has a shibud on the karka. They're denying that their father ever stole this or that he didn't pay it back or whatever. Yeah. Now, Rashi takes out this whole question about milval peh and b'sha'amad b'din. Because Rashi has several problems with it. One of them is, first of all, what do you mean? That's a milval peh and you can't collect from Yoshin. The whole point is, we just said, because of the covet of their father, they're supposed to return it. Who cares whether it's a milval peh or not? Second of all, Rashi says...
Are they obligated?
Rashi is learning that mishum kvod aviyah means that they're obligated to, yeah. Marshall points out that actually that's only according to one explanation of the Gemara over there. The Gemara gives another reason as well why they might be obligated to return. Why didn't Rashi use that? Okay, anyway. Also, Rashi has another problem with it, that what do you mean the Gemara is saying, Sha'omad Badin, that the case is where the case came to Beis Din before he died? Well, of course, we know all this time he was in Beis Din. How else would he have sworn falsely? Or how else can we be talking about Hajjah? So because of that, and then and because of some other issues, Rashi takes out those whole couple of lines and just jumps from the question that if there's a chrayus, if there's a chrayus, meaning if they inherited karka, then there's no issue of them paying a chomish because you don't pay a chomish for a shvur that involves karka. Tosfos, on the other hand, does keep the whole question and answer in, because Tosfos explains, we've learned in a few different places, and the Gemara talks about it primarily at the very end of Bava Basra, that there's a big question when we say there's such a thing as shibud on karka. When we say that if Reuben borrows money from Shimon, then now all of Shimon's karka is under a shibud to that debt. Is that midoraisa or is that midrabanan? Well, there's two different approaches on it. If we take the view that we're talking about that the whole concept of achrayus nechosim, the whole concept of shibud on karka, is only derabanan, then the question and answer fit very well over here. We're trying to figure out the dinim deraisa, because the whole concept of paying a chomesh is only deraisa. It doesn't require the derabanan. Therefore, the question would be, but if there's no shibud on karka midoraisa, then it's only a milval peh. And how are you doing a shibud here in the first place? And therefore, the answer comes in once Omad Badin, once the case was brought to Beis Din, meaning Tosfos says not it came to Beis Din and the father admitted. That tackle wouldn't work for the reason Rashi says. Rather, it came to Beis Din, meaning Edim came to Beis Din. In that case, then the father's not chayiv chomesh, because in that case, the father is just chayiv keren, as we will learn later on, that if Edim come instead of him admitting, then he pays only the keren.
He came to Beis Din himself
and admitted, then he'd be on the hook for the chomesh. But like this, because Edim came, he's only on the hook for the keren, and now he dies, and therefore you can't be mechayiv his children in the chomesh as well, because back to what the Gemara says, because it involves a denial of karka. Rava says, I'll give you a different answer, why it is that the sons might be chayiv to pay only the keren but not the chomesh. Suppose that there was a bag, diski literally means a double bag, like a saddle bag, kind of like they have one side of it hanging on each side of an animal. They used to use them to hold money and other valuables like that. So suppose that there was a diskia belonging to his father, mufkedes biyad acherim, that was at the kodin in somebody else's hands. So let's go back to all this time we're assuming the original thing his father stole no longer exists, and we're talking about the question, is he paying the value of it? Is he, why shouldn't he have to pay the chaimish, et cetera? Let's say that no. Let's say the original money that his father, or whatever goods that his father stole, still exists there in the diskia. Now, so this diskia is in somebody else's hands. When the father dies, his father deposited it with somebody else for safekeeping. The son doesn't know that this diskia includes stolen goods in it. So now, when he comes to Beis Din after his father died, when the nigzel comes to Beis Din after the gazlan dies and takes the son of the gazlan to Beis Din, your father stole something from me. Then the son, when he swears that I don't have anything in my possession of your father's, he didn't know. He's swearing truthfully. Well, right. Therefore, you can't make him be Mechayev B'chaimish. Keren Meshalem Do Isay. So you make him pay the Keren, because after all, the Keren does exist. Chaimish, Loi Meshalem, but you don't make him pay the Chaimish. Dechi Yishtaba B'kushte Yishtaba, because when he swore what he thought was truthfully. This whole concept of being Mechayev a person for a false Shavua, where in this case you Mechayev a Mechaimish, and in other cases you make him Chayev in a Korban Shavua, as we'll learn on Amud Beis, all of those only apply if you know you were swearing falsely. Not like in this case where he didn't even know he thought that he's swearing truthfully. So, because after all, he had no way of knowing. If his father had told him, but his father didn't tell him. All he knew is that this gear is available, but he didn't know what's in it. So therefore, so that neatly explains, then Rava says, without going into this whole case, Sha'amad Badin, and his father admitted, and he swore falsely, etc. You don't need all of that. All you have to say, very simply, is that the son didn't know that the Gzela was still in his possession.
Right. It doesn't have to be a diskia. It can be any other.
Well, I'll be right. The diskia is a typical example. You have like a closed bag, and you whatever. The Mishnah had said that if you paid back everything except for, we said in the Mishnah that if you stole something from somebody and then swore falsely that you stole, that you didn't steal it or you paid back or whatever, then later on when you trigger, you have to take it to him, you have to take it wherever he is, even if he's in Mada, even if he's far away. But the Mishnah had said a few cases where you don't. One of them is if you returned everything except for less than a shava pruta of the Karen. But because it's less than a shava pruta, we don't make you go all the way to Modai with it.
He stole or not borrowed?
Stole. We're talking about primarily.
And he paid back everything.
He paid back everything except for less than a shava pruta. Yeah. This that we're saying that you don't have to that you don't have to go all the way to Modai is only if the actual gzela itself no longer exists. So, for example, you stole a bag of apples, let's say. Each apple in and of itself is not worth a pruta. Now, the apples don't exist anymore. You ate them already, and we're talking about paying them back. So you paid back. The whole bag of apples was worth $2. You paid back $1.95. You left 5 cents, which is less than a pruta. So therefore, that's what we're talking about. A pruta is about 10 cents, roughly, I think. I think so. Let's say, whatever, just for argument's sake.
Apples lowest unit.
What? Okay, maybe. We talked about it in Kedushin, whether it's a certain actual amount or whether it's, I think we talked at the time that I think Moshe Feinstein or somebody says that it's the lowest amount that would have any purchasing power. Nowadays, a penny has no purchasing power. A nickel doesn't really either have any purchasing power. A dime is really Okay, anyway, whatever. Aval Gzela Kayemet, but if the actual Gzela itself still exists, so if he still has one apple, which is worth 5 cents, that you do have to go and follow him and bring it even to Madad. Chayshinan Shemetis Yakir, because you have to be concerned, what if the value of it later goes up? If the value of it later on goes up, then it's appropriate, you have to return it. There's actually a few different, well, okay, let's continue, and then we'll talk about a few different. Ikadamri, another version, Amra Papa, no, Loishna Gzela Kayemetz, Loishna Shein Gzela Kayemetz. Actually, according to the second version, it doesn't matter whether the original Gzela exists or whether it doesn't exist and you're just paying back the value. Either way, ain't it tzarech leilachasav? Either way, if all you have is less than a shava pruta of it, you don't have to go follow him. We do not need to be concerned about that it may go up. So, first of all, there's a bunch of Rishonim talk about the question. According to the first version, when we say tzarech leilachasav or ain't tzarech leilachasav, does it mean, or according to either version, really, does it mean you do have a mitzvah to pay it back all the same? Just that Beis Din can't compel you to do it, maybe.
Or some
Rishonim, I think the Ramah talks about that maybe even Beis Din can compel you, not mitzvah the mitzvah of the Heishim HaSagzeva specifically, because less than a Shavu Prutta, and in fact the Chinuch says a Yid is usually Moichel on less than a Shavu Prutta, but rather because first there is a mitzvah saseh involved. There is a mitzvah saseh involved of the Heishiv HaSagzela, and therefore maybe Beis Din can compel you to do that. Or maybe, in other words, what we mean is ain't it tzarech leilach afra, he doesn't have to schlep all the way to Madai to return it. But if the guy is in town, then maybe Beis Din can force him to return it. Or maybe not. Maybe it means they can't even.
In one case, doesn't have to return it because it's less than a shavu.
This is what we're talking about. It's less than a shavu. So all it is, according to the different versions, we're talking about is it the actual object that he stole, which is he still has less than a shavu prota of the object that he stole, as opposed to having paid it all back except for less than a shavu prota. Or according to the second version, doesn't matter. But again, even if we say it doesn't matter, does that mean that he can't be forced to? Does that mean that Beis Din can't force him to return it, but he should do it on his own? Or maybe it means that they can't. Or maybe it means even on his own, he doesn't need to. Also, when we say the Shemitah Yakel Lechashinim, there's a few different angles that Rishonim take on it. What happens? We're saying Lechashinim. We're not concerned if it goes up in price. What happens if it does? So, well, what does that mean, though? I mean, we're saying he doesn't have to ain't it sort of leil chafra because we're not worried about Shemitah Yakov. Does that imply what if the apple did go up in price and now it's worth a prutta?
Yeah.
What happens then? Well, you have three different approaches. You have the Rashba's approach, which is in that case, then retroactively his korban will have become possible. If he brought his korban by that point and then it goes up in price, it will have become possible. Therefore, maybe fine. You know, again, he doesn't have to take the apple. The korban becomes possible retroactively because it turns out when he brought his korban asham, he still had a pruta of the gzela in his hand. Retroactively because now it's worth a pruta. And therefore, the point is he may not have to bring it to Madai, but he does have to make sure it gets returned. Another approach, I think the Rosh's opinion is that no, once he brought the korban, that's it. You know, we're good. If it goes up in price later, we're not worried about that. And the third opinion, which is the Reed Tosfos, and the Torah brings a couple of these opinions as well, and agrees with the Reed on this, is that Loi Chashinin means we're not even worried in the first place, and therefore you don't have to return it. Period. If it's less than a prota, you don't have to return it. Period. Like Hashem, there's no reason to worry about if it goes up in price, because even if it does go up in price, you were already potter because it was at the time that you did the rest of the hashava, it was worth less than a prota, and therefore your korban's kosher and you're good. The halacha, I think, is, well, I mean, again, once the machlok is between Rishonim, I don't know that the halacha is definitive. But the tour mentions the shita of the re. This third possibility that you don't have to return it at all. I believe in Shulchan Aruch Paskins like that as well. Omer Rava, gozel shalosh agudis b'shalosh prutis. What if a person stole three bundles of something of carrots, let's say, b'shalosh prutis, where the three bundles are worth three prutis, so each bundle is worth a pruta. But who's the Omdu Ashtayim? And then the price went down, and now the three bundles are only worth two prutas. Im Hechtel Ashtayim, if he returned him two of those bundles, Chayav L'Hechtel L'Acheret, then he's still obligated to return the other one, even though the other one is not worth a pruta anymore. Because when he stole it, it was worth a pruta. The Tana Tuna, and our Tana taught, meaning we learn in a Mishnah something similar, we learned at the beginning of the Perek, Gozo chametz va'over olav ha-pesach. If a person stole chametz and then Pesach passed and the chametz is now also v'hana'ah, so it's worthless, oim alay harei shalach ha-fanecha. The gazlan can say harei shalach ha-fanecha, meaning here's your chametz back. The fact that it's not worth anything is not my concern. It's a hezek shein nikar. Implying taima de'isei be'enei. Why is he allowed to say that? Because the chametz itself still exists. He's returning the same chametz that he stole. Implying, though, that if it did not exist in its original form, so in this case, where he stole three agudas and then he ate them, let's say, so the original agudas no longer exists. So even though now the one bundle was worth less than a pruta, but since originally it did have a monetary value of a pruta, then he has to pay. So the same thing in the case of a chomet. In other words, if he had stolen the chomet and eaten it, and now after Pesach, he ate it after Pesach, let's say, when it was ready also by now, illegally. Now he's coming to return, and he still has to return the value of it. because at the time, because it itself no longer exists. In the case of Chometz, it's worthless. But nevertheless, so the same thing over here. Hochanami, afagav the hashkol, the shavu pruta. Same thing here. Even though now it's not worth a pruta, kibin dem ikra, have a shavu pruta, since originally it was worth a pruta, boi shalumi, then he does have to pay. Okay, well, Tosfos points out that actually not all of what Rav is saying over here directly comes from the Mishnah. This that we're saying, for example, that the Mishnah over there about the Chometz is talking about it's an all or nothing thing. Here we're talking about he stole three bundles and he returned two of them already. This that we're saying that nevertheless you're obligated to return the third one, even though by itself it's worth less than a prutah, that you don't get directly from the Mishnah. That's Rava's own chiddush. Okay. Now, boy Rava, so now Rava asks,
you don't have to.
The Mishnah doesn't say clearly one way or the other. The Mishnah is telling us about Chometz. Well, we don't know. That Rava is being mechadish, that not only it applies where it's an all or nothing thing, like returning the Chometz or not returning it, it even applies where you return part of it and just the rest is worth less than a prutah. But it was worth a prutah.
So Rava's opinion is not really the opinion, but
interpreting. He's interpreting the Mishnah, but adding on it. He's adding a chiddush on it that you wouldn't directly know from the Mishnah. Okay. Omar Rava, so now Rava asks, boy Rava, Rava asks the related question then. Gozel shtei agudas b'prutah. What if he stole two bundles that together are worth a prutah? The hechta by achas mehen. He returned one of them. So, in other words, the difference is, in the previous case, at the time he stole them, each one was worth a pruta. Here, when he stole the two, neither one was worth a pruta. So,
one was.
There's two differences. Number one, in the previous case, there were three bundles which were worth three prutas. So, first of all, at the time he stole. Then he stole three prutas worth, but also, first of all, what he returned is worth more than pruta, because he returned two bundles, which now are worth a pruta and a half, and before they were worth two prutas, and what he had left was originally worth a pruta, and now is worth two-thirds of a pruta. Here it's a little bit different. What he stole to begin with was only a pruta. Each bundle by itself was only half a pruta. Now he returns one, which is only returning half a pruta, and then the other one is only worth a half a pruta.
Mahu.
We're not talking about. No, now we're talking about the price stays the same. Mahu. So what would be the din? Miyamrin and hashta like a zela. Do we say, well, now he doesn't have something that can be considered zela because less than a pruta? Oidilma ha loyhoda zela dahavori gabe. Or maybe not. After all, he didn't return the full theft that was by him because he stole a full pruta's worth and he didn't return yet a full pruta. Hoda pashta. Later on, after asking the question, Rava answered it. Gzela ain't kan, hashava ain't kan. There's no gzela here. There's no returning here. Now, what does that mean?
It's an opposite of what it said
before. The difference is because over here, each one by itself is not worth a pruta. Then when he stole them, each one was worth a pruta. But the question is, on the Lashon, gzela ain't kan, hashava yashkan. What do you mean? If gzela ain't kan would imply that there's no more gzela in his possession. Well, that means he's accomplished the mitzvah of Hashava, because less than a pruta. What do you mean by saying there's no gzela, implying he doesn't have what's considered a stolen object by him anymore, because it's only half a pruta, but still there's no Hashava? What does that mean? Hachakama, it means like this, afapish gzela ain't kan, even though it's true at this point he doesn't have a gzela in his possession anymore, because he has only less than a pruta's worth, nevertheless, mitzvah hashava ain't kan. He doesn't have the mitzvah of hashava over here, though. So far, by returning only the half of pruta, he has not accomplished the mitzvah of hashava. And again, Mefarshim talk about, does that mean, does the Gemara also mean to imply that he doesn't have to return the other one because he won't be accomplishing the mitzvah of a heshev and a gzela by that anyway, because he'll only be returning a half of pruta. Or maybe he still will be required to return it.
It's amazing it could mean he's still required to return it. In order to be Yossi should return.
No, but we're talking about it.
The
Chaimish is only if he saw a horse. That's what we're talking about over here. But if the whole Karen itself was a pruta and he already returned half of it, then we can discuss. Can he be obligated again? Does it mean can Beis Din obligate him to? Does he have to do it on his own, et cetera, to return the other half of it? V'omar Rava. So now in this connection, since we're talking about stealing two things and returning one of them, where you did a full gzela and you can ask whether the hashava is considered a valid hashava. So we're going to have, the Gemara is going to bring in, Rava is going to ask similar questions about a couple of other areas of halacha. Also, where you can have, if you divide something in two, does it still have the status of the whole, basically?
So for Omar Rava, Hare Omru. Now we know they said this is going back to Masech the Nazir. Nazir shegilach v'shir shtei tairis, that if a Nazir shaved his hair and left over two hairs, lo yosef v'lo klum, then what he did doesn't count for anything. He has not accomplished the mitzvah of gilach. We learned that. We also learned over there that it's machlokas rishonim. I think it was a machlokas in the Gemara already. Does that mean he can't bring his karbonis until he does a proper shaving? Or does it mean he can still bring his karbonis, but he hasn't accomplished the mitzvah the right way? The nafkamina would be, in other words, does he have to wait till, if he doesn't have a chance, would he have to cut those two hairs before he brings his karbonis? And in the cases that we're going to discuss now, where there's only one hair left, would he maybe have to regrow all his hair long enough in order to be able to cut it and do the mitzvah of giluach? Or maybe not, he didn't do the mitzvah the right way, but he can still bring his karbonis.
How long do the hair have to be?
We learned in Nazir, it has to be long enough to be able to cut with scissors, or to be able to pluck with tweezers, whatever, yeah. So, boy, Rava. So now, Rava asks, based on that, Gilach Achras V'Nosha Achras Mahu. What happens if he shaved off one hair of those two that were left, and the other one fell off? What would be the din? Amalei Rav Acha Midif to the Ravina. The Nazir Shegilach Achras Achras Kamei Boylei LeRava. What's Rava's problem? Isn't that effectively the equivalent of a person were to cut all of his hair? Let's say there were 100 hairs there, and he cut them one at a time. I mean, of course, when he came to cut, there were two hairs left, which is considered a valid cutting. The other one fell off. That's not his problem. What he did is a valid giluach. Amalei loitzricha. So Ravina answers, yes, but Rava's question was needed to mention nosha achas man v'giluach achas. But the other way around, if the one hair fell off of the two, and then he shaved the other one. So now we can ask Mahu.
If he shaved the one,
then there's no question. It's good. Because at the time he started shaving, there were two hairs there, and two hairs is the minimum you need for giluach. But like this, if
he shaved one.
What? It doesn't matter. The fact is, he could have shaved both of them, just the other one fell out before he had a chance to shave it. So there's no question that's good. But the question is the other way around. If the one fell out, and then he shaved the other one. Mia minin hashta mia haleka shir. So do we say that now there's no shir? One hair is not enough for giluach. Therefore, you can't be accomplishing the mitzvah of giluach like that. Adilma. Do we say hashtamiyas halakha shir? The fact is, at this point, the shir doesn't exist anymore, meaning that's it. There's no more two hairs, therefore he's been yotze, he accomplished giluach. Maybe that's not a valid giluach. Because originally he left over two hairs, which would be enough. Two hairs are enough to accomplish mitzvah giluach. And now, when he comes to shave it, he doesn't have two hairs anymore because one of them fell out.
I would say in either case, it wouldn't be possible. It wouldn't be yotze. But as long as he didn't cut two hairs.
No. Again, if we cut the one and then the other one fell out, there's no question.
Right. The mitzvah is cutting,
but when he started cutting that second time, there were two hairs there. You can be yotze the mitzvah by doing that. So the fact that one of them fell out instead of him cutting it doesn't prevent the mitzvah from having been accomplished. But if the other way around, before he started cutting the remaining two hairs, one of them fell out and there's only one left to cut, then that's Rava's question. Have you accomplished mitzvah giluach? So that Tosfos mentions over here the two possibilities that I just mentioned. If we say that he hasn't accomplished mitzvah giluach, does that mean he has to actually wait till all his hair regrows, then shave it, and then he can bring his karbonis and be allowed to drink wine, etc.? Or does it mean he can go ahead and bring his karbonis? He just hasn't accomplished the mitzvah the right way. Anyway, that was Rava's question. And Hoder Poshta, later on, after asking the question, Rava answered it, Seir Einkan Giluach Einkan. And he said, there's no hair here, there's no Giluach. So again, the expression doesn't make sense. E Seir Einkan Giluach Yeshkan. If there's no hair there, then it means, effectively, it means he's accomplished the mitzvah of Giluach. What do you mean? It means like this, Afafisha Seir Einkan, even though it's true at this point, there's no more hair, mitzvah giluach einkan, nevertheless, there's no mitzvah giluach over here, because he only was megaleach one hair, and one hair is not enough for mitzvah giluach. So similar to the thing with the gzela. The other way around it is, so the same thing, similar to the gzela, therefore, when he returned half of it, he taka doesn't have the gzela in his possession anymore, because he doesn't have a prutta of gzela by him anymore. Nevertheless, he doesn't have the mitzvah of hashava. He can't accomplish the mitzvah of hashava by returning half a prutta. Just like over here, he can't accomplish the mitzvah of giluach by shaving one hair. Another one, v'omar rava, hare omru. Now, we know here's a din in the halachas of tumah v'tahara. We know the pasuk tells us in Parshas Chukas, the section that we read for Parshas Parah, that if a kli cheres is tumid pasul, if it has a sealed covering on it, then anything that's inside it remains tahor, even if it's in an oil amet, so even if it's in a building where well, unless the kli cheres has a hole in it, unless it's tumid or it has a hole in it, yeah. So if it's uncovered, yeah. So. So if you have an earthenware barrel that has a hole in it, it's a small shmarim, but the dregs that are at the bottom, let's say it's a wine barrel, the dregs, the solid stuff that comes down from the wine, it seals up the hole. In other words, the hole is close enough to the bottom that the dregs close it up. Hitziluha, then they save it. Rashi says saves it in the sense that, let's say, for example, if you were to take this kli cheres, let's say you had a ground floor and a second floor, and you had a skylight between them, an opening between them. If you were to put this kli cheres over the hole, it would prevent the tumah that's in the house from going to the second floor. Because a kli cheres can't become tumah from the outside. As opposed to if it had a hole in it, if it didn't have the shmarim closing up the hole, then the kli cheres would become tumah because the tumah would go into the inside of it. And once it's tumah, it wouldn't prevent the tumah from spreading to the second floor.
That's regardless how the kli cheres is made of, if it's made of porcelain or...
It doesn't matter, yeah, as long as it's fired. If it's unfired, it's clay, it's called clay adama, and then it's not makabel tumah at all. Tosfos has some problems with that explanation of Rashi, and Tosfos says, no, we're talking about the situation where you have, never mind a first floor and a second floor, you have a building that has a mess in it, you have this kli cheres in there, the kli cheres has a sealed shut, let's say, and there's things inside it. You're concerned, are the things inside it tumah? So if the hole is sealed shut, if the hole is closed up with the shmarim, then you're good. Everything that's inside the kli cheres is going to be tumah. If the hole was open, then the tumah would come right in there, and the stuff inside the kli cheres would become tumah.
And touching kli cheres.
Touching kli cheres on the outside doesn't make a tumah. It's only from the inside it becomes tumah. So, boy, Rava. So now Rava asks on that, ogaf chet yamahu. What happens if he closed up half of the hole? So you had a hole big enough to be for the keli to be makabel tumah.
We saw that already.
Yeah. No. That's what we talked about as far as a mikveh, I think. Whatever. We learned way, way back at Shabbos what size the hole has to be. It really depends on what the purpose of the keli is, whether it's meant for foods or drinks or whatever. Anyway, the point is, whatever the size of the hole is supposed to be, suppose that you closed up half of it. Suppose, in other words, Rashi learns that you took raw clay, unfired clay,
right.
Closed up half the hole with that, and now the other half is still open. So on the one hand, you still have a hole there, but on the other hand, the hole was not big enough to transmit tumah.
Depends on the
purpose of the keli. It can be a hole big enough for liquid to go out, to go in, for olives to fall out, for pomegranates to fall out. We learned way, way back in Shabbos about it. What does Rava need to ask the question? Don't we have a Mishnah that tells us exactly that? If you have an earthenware container that has a hole in it and the dregs closed it up to hitziluha, then they save it, as we said before. But the Mishnah continues. Potukab is murder. If you closed up the hole with a piece of with a branch, like from over with a piece of wood with a branch from a tree, ad shimareach, it's not good enough unless you smear clay around the edges, because otherwise you stick the end of a stick into a hole in an earthenware container, it doesn't make an airtight seal. There's still gaps around it, so you need to put tick, you need to put clay on there in order to close it up. And the Mishnah continues, what if you use two branches to close up the hole? Then you need, in order for it to remain tahor, you need to put clay around both sticks and between them. Because you have a gap between the two sticks otherwise. So, time of demarach, holoi marach loi. So, implying only if you smeared clay on all the sides would it be good, but if not, then not. You have to ask. If Rava is asking if he only closed up the hole halfway, you're asking whether it's Torah or not. Am I? Why does he have to ask? Tevik yogav chetzia. Why? Putting in a branch is no less than closing up half the hole, and we see that that's not good enough. Why should Rava think that closing up half the hole with clay would be good? Amri, so the answer, Hochi Hashta, how do you think to compare them? Hossam ilay marach lekoi. The difference is that if you don't smear clay around the branch, it's not even going to stay in place. It's going to fall right out. The branch. Yeah, if you stick a branch into a hole in an earthenware container and you don't have something to hold it in place, it's going to fall out. But if you close up half the hole with clay, the midi de koi koi. Fine, the part that's closed up is going to stay closed up. The fact is, the clay is strong enough to stand there by itself. Therefore, Rava can have the question.
So the question is not about the space that remains with the bronze.
Yeah, the question is about the space that remains. The question is, the hole is like this. You close up half of it with tit. The other half is not big enough for tumor to come in. But do we say we ignore that because unless the whole hole is closed up, then you, it's an all or nothing thing. The Amar Rava. Hare Omru. Here's another question. We learned in the Mishnah, Gozo Chometz V'Ovar Alo Pesach, Omer L'Harei Shalach Panecha, you stole Chometz, Pesach passed. You could still return the original Chometz as it is and say, Harei Shalach Panecha. Boi Rava, Nishba Alo Mahu. What about, though, that Mishnah was talking about that you came and returned it after Pesach. What happens is, in between, after the Chometz became Osir, you swore on it that you didn't steal it. So now that Mahu, what's the din? Do we apply Keren v'chomish v'ashem or not? Mi amrinan, do we say kiven di migniv bo shalom alei memoina? Mikod bo shalom alei. We can say like this. On the one hand, if that chometz were to be stolen during Pesach, even though it's also bana, now the ganav is going to be chayav to pay the money, because that's what we said before. Only if the chometz itself is still existent, then he can say harei shalach panecha. But if it's gone, even though it was also bana, he's still going to have to pay the original value. Kol hagazlonim misham shasak zeila. So in this case, yes, if the chometz were to be stolen, he would have to pay. Therefore, Ramona Kakopale, therefore you can argue that by denying and swearing falsely, he was denying something which has an actual monetary value, because potentially it does. Or the fact of the matter is, it wasn't stolen from him. It is in his possession right now. But Afra Ba'alma, when it's just the bottle of the heavy hefka ka'afra da'ara, it's like dust of the earth. But like Kofale Ramona. And he hasn't denied and he hasn't sworn falsely on something which is mumming. So therefore, you can't make him pay the keren because there was no keren for it. Can't make him pay a chomish because a chomish of zero is still zero, and therefore no asham. Okay. The Gemara says milta di boile the rava pshita le the rabba. Now this that rava is asking about is something which rabba, who was rava, was one of rava's rabbis, knew for sure. The Amar rabba, because rabba says in a similar case. Suppose that one person says to the other, Shori ganavta, you stole my ox. He says, I didn't steal it. So the first person asks, Mativo yatmacha, fine, so what's this ox do? I see, doch, my ox is by you. What's it doing by you, according to you then? He says, Shemachinam ani olav. Suppose he says, I'm a Shemachinam on it. Chayev, and swears falsely that he's a Shemachinam. Later on, he does tshuva, and he admits that he swore falsely. He's Chayev. He's chayav for the korban for the shvua, because he accomplished something with that shvua. He by saying he's a shoy mechinam, he patterned himself. If it were to have gotten lost or it were to have gotten stolen during that time, he would have been potter, because a shoy mechinam is potter on such things.
Did he lie?
We don't know yet that he lied. As far as we knew at the time, he swore truthfully. As opposed to, if he's the ganav, then he's chayav in gneva v'aveda. So therefore, by swearing that he's a shoy mechinam, he accomplished something for himself at the time. Therefore, that's enough to be mechayev him in a korban that you bring for a false shavua.
And if by the time we know that he lied, is he chayev retroactively or not?
I don't understand.
When he says
he's a shoy mechinam, he swears falsely. He's potter from then on. Meaning, in other words, as long as we think he's a shem mechinam, if that animal later on gets lost or stolen or whatever, he can come to base and swear that it was lost or whatever, and as a shem mechinam, he'd be potter, right?
But after that, if we discover that he's alive,
then he's not a shem mechinam. The point is, we're going to make him chayav a korban for the shvur, for the false shvur. Which, by the way, there's two different kinds of korban for a false shvur. We're talking about the kind of a here. We're talking about the kind of a here which the Torah mentions in where is it? Parshas Vayikra, I think, that that you're if you swear falsely in a way that would benefit you financially, similar to what we're talking about over here of a Gazlan swearing falsely, then you chayev a korban for that. You chayev a korban for that, as opposed to there's a different kind of korban for a shvur called shvur bitui, where there it doesn't matter whether you gain yourself something by it. Both kinds we'll learn in Masechta Shavuos in next year, Be'ez Hashem. Okay, anyway. Continues Rava, Shema Sachar on Yolov. What if a person instead says, I'm a Shema Sachar on this animal? Also Chayev. He's also Chayev because he also accomplished something by that. Because he said, effectively, then he's saying, if this animal were to get broken or die, which are Einsim, which a Shema Sachar is Potter on, then he'd be Potter. Shoyal on Yolov Chayev. Furthermore, if he says, I'm a Shoyal on it, he's also Chayev. Shari Potter Atom and Mesa Machas Malacha. Because he's still Pottering himself from something which he would have been Chayev in if he had admitted that he ganvid it. Namely, as a ganav, he'd be chayav for anything that happens there. As a shoyel, he's potter from mesa machas malacha if it dies in the normal course of work. He didn't overwork it. He did exactly the usual thing that a regular shoyel is potter in such a case. A ganav is not. Hashem achinim for sure. Yeah. Alma. So what do you see from that? Afagav de hakoyim. So even though the actual animal still exists, because we're not talking about the animal didn't die or get stolen or lost or what have you. It still exists. Kiven de imigna of mamona kakafa. Yet we say, were it to have gotten stolen, then we would say he's kofer on something of mamon. He's pattering himself from the from having to pay for it being stolen, etc. Hashtanami mamona kakafa. Nevertheless, we say that even now he's considered like he's being kofer in mamon and is chayev on the korban for that. Hachanami. So the same thing in the case that Rava was asking about, where he stole chometz before Pesach. Yes, the chometz itself has no value right now. But because if it were to get stolen, you would be chayev for paying for it, and by swearing falsely that you didn't steal it, you're pattering yourself for that. Afagav de afra ba'alma, even though now it's considered dust. Kiven de imigna bo shalom alei mamona, since if it were to have gotten stolen, you would have to pay money, similar to the case of the guy who's falsely claiming to be a shomer. You have to pay him the full value. Hashanami mamona kokofalo. The same thing now. You say that he's considered he was kofer in mamon, and therefore he's chayev, and therefore he's going to be chayev for the keren, the chomesh, and the asham. Okay. Yosef Rava v'kamala hoshmaita. So Rava was sitting and saying over this teaching. Agoris Abach changes it, not Rava, because we said Rava before was the one who had the shayla on it. It's rather Rava. Rava himself, who just clarified that. It was now sitting one time and saying this over. A spirit of Amram l'Rava, or l'Rava, sort of Amram asks him, I have a spirit. A braisa says, v'chicheshba, when the Pasuk says a person is chayav the keren and the chomish and the asham for swearing falsely, and the Pasuk uses the expression, v'chicheshba, he denies it. Prat l'moide be'ikir, the word that he denies it comes to exclude the case where he's admitting the basic claim. Okay, wait, Keita, what does that mean? For example, one person says to the other, Shori Ganavti, you stole my ox. Goyim Eloi Ganavti, he says, I didn't steal it. So he asks him, Mati V'yatmacha, so what they're doing by you? He says, At Machartali, At Nesatali Matana, you sold it to me, or you gave it to me as a gift, or Avicha Machrali, Avicha Nasnali Matana, or your father sold it to me, or your father gave it to me as a Matana, Acha Parati Rot, or for example, I have it because it ran after my cow, and therefore it's in there, and therefore now it's in my Rishos. Or me'elav ba'etzli, or just it wandered into my property on its own, or toya baderach mitzasiv, or I found it wandering on the side of the road, I figured it was lost, so I brought it home, or shemachinim aniyalav, shemasacha aniyalav, shoyal aniyalav, the nishba v'hoida. In all those cases, the braisa says, suppose that then he swore falsely on one of these statements. Then later on, he was murdered that none of these things are true. Yochol yehei chayev, you would think that he is chayev to pay the keren, the chomish, and the hashem. Tamad loyma, v'chicheshba, prap l'moide be'ikir. Therefore, no, the pasuk says, v'chicheshba, as opposed to where he's admitting the basic fact.
But admitting means
after
you denied?
Cool. Yeah, of course admitting means after he denied. But the point is, we're going to have to discuss soon what we mean by moide be'ikir. Basically, moide be'ikir in all these cases, for example, when he says it wandered to me, basically means, so I never intended to steal it. It came here, it wandered in on its own. But it's yours all this time. I'm in other words, when would we make him chayev to swear if he denied stealing it? But like this, where he's saying, well, okay, you know, there was never any theft involved here in the first place. It just wandered in by me. It's right here for you. Yeah.
Whereas he really stole it.
Yeah, well, the point is, yes, so that's the question. In other words, so Rabba was saying that if he claimed that he was a Shemachinam, Shemachinam, or Shoyal, he's going to swore falsely on that, he's going to be chayiv from this bright that you see his potter. Amalei, Tedura. So Rabba says to Rab Amram, Tedura. Rashi translates it as a very strong expression, ein lev, you have no heart. Not no heart as in heartless, but no heart as in lev ladaf. You don't have a heart to understand. In modern terms, you would say you don't have a brain yet. So there is, by the way, there's a famous tshuva from the Chabad Yoyer where he discusses in some detail all these kinds of things throughout Shach, where we find one of the Amoraim speaking very strongly to another one. And in fact, we're going to have something similar in Bav Metzia in a few weeks where there were consequences because of it. But anyway, there was a similar expression over there, Tshurada, yeah. Anyway, he says that a lot of times, though, when his colleagues like this, sort of Amram and Rabba, not necessarily would one of them object so much. They're colleagues. They're on the same level. It's okay to use sharp words with each other. It's not considered such a bad thing, he says. With that said, I did see an explanation that says that Tedura might be related to the word Tirda. Like you're distracted. You're too distracted. You're too fartist and whatever it is, so you're not thinking clearly. Like it's not, and it would soften it a little bit. Not like you don't understand Bechlava, and you're too distracted to be able to think clearly. Anyway, what's the problem? Kitanya hi jukamalei helach. That Braisa is talking about when he says, okay, it's right here. Take it. So therefore, you can't say, what's the case that Rabba is talking about where you're saying that you're mechayev him because if it were to get stolen? That's where he's not saying helach. He's saying, I'm a shemachinam, but right now I don't have it in my house right now. It's out grazing in the field. So you wouldn't be able to take it right now anyway. There's still the possibility it might get stolen during that time. This Braisa is talking about when he says helach. He says, you know what, fine, here's the animal. It wandered into my property or whatever. Take it and go ahead.
Then
there's no possibility of it being stolen or whatever during that time. You can't say that by saying he's a shemachinam, he's pattering himself from anything. So the guy is able to take it right now. What am I talking about? What I'm talking about when the animal is in the meadow, is out in the fields, out in the meadow, and it's not available right now. Okay, so the question is, so fine, among all these cases that the Braisa said, some of them were where he says, you sold it to me, or your father sold it to me, or whatever, where's the moide be'ikir? Mela, if he says, for example, I'm a shemachinam, fine, halach, take it right back. Or if he says, you sold it to me, then there's no halach, he's not saying take it back. The answer is, it's true, I didn't give you the, you did sell it to me, however, I didn't pay you for it yet. So go ahead, you can take your ox, let's undo the sale, you can take your ox back and go. So therefore, it is mode be'ikter, because he has no problem returning the ox right there. He's not claiming that you sold it to me and therefore you have to refund me the money. He's saying I never paid the money yet.
So he's called a gazlan then, or not?
Well, that, he is a gazlan, but the point is you can't say that he's chayev in the keren, the chomish, and the osham. He's chayev in the keren, he's returning the actual animal, but you can't make him chayev in the chomish and the osham because he did right away admit that the animal actually belongs by you. Without saying, no, that I'm a ganav.
That's after the guy came to him.
After the guy came to him, right. Okay. What about after Nesakali or Vichanos and they might be a character? Fine. What about, though, if you're saying you gave it to me or your father gave it to me, then there's no money changing hands. Where's the mode to be here? Where's the saying, well, go ahead and take it right back? The answer is Domele, because it could be a case where you could say, Amenasta Bidlo Lachod Nayach Sinapsha, Vilo Yabiloch. Yes, but I'm claiming that you gave it to me as a gift because one time I did something nice for you. Because one time I was going to do something nice for you, rather. You gave it to me as a gift on condition with the understanding that at some point I'm going to do such and such for you. In the end, I didn't end up doing it for you. Shkil Tarek Vazil. So go ahead and take your ox and take it because I'm not going to end up doing this thing for you anyway. So again, he's moida in the sense that he's giving back the animal, but he's not actually saying, he's not actually being moida that I stole it. Toya Baderach Mitzosiv. What about another case from the Braisa where he says, I found it wandering on the road? Why can't the Balabas then say, okay, if you found it wandering on the road, what are you doing? What are you having it by you? You should have right away returned it to me. Yes, but what it means is he swears, I found it lost. But I didn't know that it was yours until now. You showed up with simonim or whatever. Otherwise, I would have returned it to you. So again, he's saying, hey, look, now that you're here, oh, then okay, you turned up, and I can return it to you now.
But you have an obligation to bring it to base team?
No, you don't bring an obligation to the base team. You announce it, you announce it, whatever, but yeah.
He didn't have a chance to announce it.
So he said.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Tanya. Oh, yeah. Tanya, on the banana, Gimel Shavua is saying there are three cases of Shavua. Now, here we're going to be shifting a little bit, and we're going to be talking about a different kind of Shavua. The Torah tells us there's a few different cases where you have to bring a korban for a Shavua. One of them we've been talking about where you swore falsely in a way that will benefit you financially. Another one is called Shavua to Eidos, when there's somebody who knows Eidos that would benefit you, and you tell him, please come to Beis Din and give Eidos on my behalf, and he swears falsely that he doesn't know that Eidos. Later on, when he does tshuva and admits that later on, he'll have to bring a korban Olah V'Yogin.
He's an Eidzaimim?
No, not an Eidzaimim. He never came to Beis Din in the first place. But you told him, it's actually two Eidim, it would have to be really, but we'll talk about in the Gemara whether it's really one or two Eidim over here, but whatever. Eidim, that you say, you guys were there when I lent money to Shimon, come to Beis Din, they say, we don't know. Later on, it's called Shavuot the Eidos. It would have to be actually they swore falsely and based in that they don't know, whatever. Well, when we get to Masechta Shavuot, we'll learn about the details of it. But whatever, there is such a thing called Shavuot the Eidos where they have to bring a korban Olah V'Yogin for it. What the difference is, unlike the Shavuot that we were talking about where it gives you financial benefit, what you bring is a korban Oshon. Here, what they bring is a korban Olah V'Yogin. A korban where if they're rich they bring a sheep, and if they're poorer they bring birds, and if they're even poorer than that they bring a korban mincha. Anyway, so Ben Azai says Gimel Shavuos. There's three such cases of Shavuos. Number one, Hikur Bavaloi B'Motza. One is where the aid recognized the animal, but not the one who found it. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says that. I'm able to give Eidos that it was found in such and such a place, but I don't know who the one is who found it. So now that doesn't really completely help the Balabas. He would be able to go ask around in that neighborhood to find out who the finder is, but it's not something that could actually be brought to Beis Din and force the guy to pay it back. Or the moats of a loibar, or the other way around. He says, I know who found it, but I didn't know, but I didn't know whose it is. Or loy bav loy b'moitza, or I don't know either one. I saw somebody find an animal, but I don't know who the someone is, and I don't know whose animal it was. So all those cases are three kinds of shvur. There's a number of different rishonim talk about what we mean over here. So basically, in all those cases, and again, we're talking about that the guy brings the aid to Beis Din and makes him swear, do you know this Eidos? And he says no, and afterwards he admits. So if he says one of these three things, so Rashi learns we're talking about one aid over here. The number of Mepharshim would say we're actually talking about two aidim. But anyway, the point is, in all those cases, he is potter. Well, actually, we're going to see what it means. We're going to see what it is. All Ben Azai is saying is there's these three cases of Shavua. We don't know yet what's the situation with these three cases. So that's what, let's continue. First of all, we have to ask, Loi Bav Loi Memoitza Kushde Shtaba. If he doesn't know, if he can't identify the animal that was found, and he can't identify who found it, then when the guy brings him to Beis Din and says, do you know any aiders that'll help in this connection, he's swearing truthfully. Where's the false Shavua? Aim a Bav Memoitza. No, you have to change it. The other way around, he knows who found it. He knows who found it. He knows where. He knows whose animal it was and where it was found. However, he swears he doesn't. However, again, Rashi says we're talking about here was one aid, and because it's one aid anyway.
Just one aid.
Because if it was two aid, then Rashi learns that it would be not zaymen. Then they would be chayav shvuos aedus, because then their aedus would have actually accomplished something in Beis Din. Again, there are other Rishonim we'll learn that we are talking about two over here, two Eidim, but even with those two Eidim, it might not be enough to actually be able to go and confront the guy and make him return it. So, yeah. What's the Nachkimin, and what does Ben Azai mean by identifying these three kinds of Shavuos? Rab Ami Amar Rab Chanina L'Ptur. It means that in all those cases, the Eid is Potter from the Shavuos Eidus and from the Korban for the false Shavuos Eidus. Or Shmuel Amar L'Chiyuv. Shmuel says it means in all those cases, he's Chayav. Or with Plugta, the Hani Tanoi. And actually, this is the same machlokas as the following Tanoi. If you make one aid swear, you have, again, in this case, a shuras aedus. You bring one person to Beis Din. Do you know, I know that you know aedus about that, or that'll help me in my case against Pliny. The guy swears falsely that he doesn't know. Later on, he does tshuva. Potter, he's potter from the korban for the shvurta edus because you need two edim to accomplish anything in Beis Din. Whereas Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon Mechayev, whereas Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon says he's chayev.
If two edim come afterwards,
doesn't matter. If two edim come afterwards, then fine. You'll decide the case based on that. But we're talking about this one potential aid disqualifies himself by saying that he doesn't know. But my committee, what's the underlying machlokas? There's a concept that we've had before. One opinion that Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon holds that something that could lead to mammon is considered like mammon. So therefore, even one aid would accomplish. If this one aid had come to Beis Din and testified, that would be enough to make the other guy swear to the truth of the claim. There's no mammon involved. It's the davar agorim mammon, because if the guy is not willing to swear, then he'll have to pay. So therefore, Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon holds that's reason enough to make him chayev for shavuos edus. Because he could have accomplished something in Beis.
One aid.
Well, Mar Savalav, come on and dummy, and the other one holds not. So by the same token over here, with this ba, v'loib, a motzev, v'loib, ba, etc., same idea then. In other words, even according to Rashi, we're talking one aid. According to the other Rishonim, we're talking two aidim. Either way, the point is there's no mammon involved per se, because it's not like based on those aidim, you could have schlepped the guy to Beis Din and made him return it. Nevertheless, but it's governed at going the moment, because you could have, at least he could have used that evidence to go find the guy if it's only one aid, or if he could have at least brought him to Beis Din.
Whatever,
going the moment, if it's something one aid is governed at going the moment, and therefore
enough to prove that you did it alone.
In other words, in a regular case, if Reuven brings Shimon to Beis Din, where's the money you owe me? And Shimon denies it. If there's one aid to the loan, then Shimon is going to have to swear. As opposed to if there were no aid him, then he wouldn't. And if there were two aid him, he'd have to pay regardless.
Right.
So therefore, one aid is davar agorim lamamon. It doesn't directly cause Shimon to pay, but it makes him have to swear, which could lead to him paying money. According to the laws of Shimon, that's reason enough that if now that one potential aid instead says, I don't know what you're talking about, I wasn't there at the time, and swears falsely on that, and later on it turns out that he was lying, then he's going to be chayev in this korban for shavuos edus. And according to the Chachamim, not because the fact is because only Dover Agur Lamamon, because his Eidus, even if he had given Eidus, all it would accomplish is to make Shimon swear, it wouldn't necessarily accomplish that Shimon would have to pay.
And according to Chachamim, only Dover.
Therefore, only Dover, therefore it's only if it's Mammon itself, not if it's Dover Agur Lamamon.